Okay, this is continuing to talk to Denise at Meudon on 9 July 76. Now, why was it that you went to Africa?
Well, I was to Africa because I like to get there, because I was there during the war. I spent 3 years afterward, I came back in the United States, I came back in France. I was also still interested in living in Africa because I
like it. You just like the country?
Yeah. So I came there, and we moved with an eclipse expedition there. So I keep the receiver that we were moving there for the eclipse expedition. So I go on using this receiver at Dakar, in Dakar, and I make some observations there.
Did you know about the eclipse when you went to Africa initially? Was that part of your
imagination? No, we were here, and we go in Africa, the eclipse, and it was around 50 or something like that.
It was 50, let's see, where was that? Well, there was one in 49, that was in France, you observed that one.
Ah, yes, it's in there, I said that part.
Right.
Not really there, I was in the United States at the time.
And when was that one in Africa, you know?
For the publication with Steinberg and Bloom on solar.
It was 51 or 52.
Yes, 51 or 52.
I can't seem to quite find it here. Oh, yes, September 51.
Yes, that's right.
And
so I knew the place where the eclipse was because I was in Africa at that time.
And this was in French Sudan?
French Sudan, yes, that's right. I traveled around during the war, so I knew the place, so I decided there's a good place to install a radio telescope. So we moved there to see the eclipse.
I see. So you were there and they came down from France?
I was back in France.
Oh,
but I was in Africa during the war, so I knew the place where So we moved there, but then when you moved there, we let the thing there because I moved to Africa.
I see.
And so I used this receiver, but it was not really it's difficult to.
You didn't publish any work from?
No, I did not publish. That. No, except this paper in the,
right.
in the African Annal. Of course, when I came back, I'd go to the observatory of Meudon. Donjon asked me, it was director of the observatory, asked me to lead a group of radio astronomy in Meudon. And then there I called for Steinberg and Bloom to move there. All the economal group moved there with me in Meudon. And then I became head of this group,
Was what year? Which year was that?
Probably 53, 54. Mm-hmm. It was the time where we start Nancy and we start the station there.
Right.
About at that time. And so we move all in Meudon, and so we were together. When I was in Paris before, Steinberg was head of the group, and I worked with him, and when I was here, we changed a little bit. But we were always friends, and there were never any problem between us, and we had a good time.
So once you began heading this group, was your first... objective to establish a station at Nancy?
Yes, the first objective was to establish a station at Nancy. Steinberg started actually before I came, and when I came as the group moved all this, I became head of the station because I was head of the group at that time. But I could say that Steinberg and Bloom did all the work in all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just heading the things. Thinking and moving around.
You were doing the thinking and they were doing the working, huh? Let's see, if I look now at your papers again, it looks like the next... These are all joint papers with Steinberg in 52 and 53 and so forth. Turning out the light here.
Maybe we can come back.
Yeah. Oh yes. Tell me about the business about the equatorial diameter of the corona being brighter than the poles, larger than the poles.
That was the result of the eclipse expedition. That was the result of the eclipse expedition.
Was this surprising to you?
not exactly surprising. Yeah, we did not expect a so large an ellipticity, because we did not expect so large an ellipticity, no. And actually, all the models that were made by the Sun at that time were all circular, you see? Right. And it was the first time that we noticed that this was really different from circular. I remember that Rai was mocking with interferometry at that time on the Sun,
right.
And he confirmed this rapidly and showed that we were right, actually. It was,
and what did you think of it in terms of the theory of the corona?
Well, we can deduce from this the temperature and the pole as compared to the temperature of the at the edge, and this is and the density and temperature, you know, there is a, it was not well known at that time. It was the first result in the solar corona were deduced by van der Hulst at that time. It was a model of van der Hulst that was rather crude, and I don't know even if it make a difference between the pole and the...
I don't know either.
No, I don't think so at that time. It was not very, it was very the very beginning of this, all this, all these things. Well, we were suspecting that there were less activity at the pole, but we did not suspect that the quite sun was so elliptic that...
even in the corona?
Even in the corona, yeah, that's right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, what about if we change wavelengths now to the short wavelengths, where there was a controversy, I believe, in the early 1950s about limb brightening and whether it existed or not. And Steinberg was telling me that he thinks it's still a controversy. It's still not clear whether it exists. But anyway, back in the early 50s, your observations, and you published with Denise and Bloom in Nature, for instance, that there was limb brightening on the Sun at 3 centimeters.
Mm-hmm.
Is this correct? Now, is this what your theory had predicted earlier?
Yes, that there should be? Yes, there should be, yes.
Right.
Yes.
And so that was exactly what you expected then?
Yes, that's right. Yes, yes, yes.
Now, who were the people that were saying that there should be no limb brightening? Oh, am I wrong? Was everybody agreed on that point?
I guess so, because that was... I don't remember, maybe... Or maybe there were people that... Well, there was controversy, I remember, but I don't see...
What was their reasoning? Do you remember that?
No, simply they did not find it. They thought they didn't find it in the results. But the eclipse showed that it should be some brightening. And we did not have enough resolution at that time to show that it was brightening. It was
right.
You know, the people who are interferometer did not have enough resolution, but we had more resolution with them brightening.
Now, in 1953, together with... that's right, you weren't involved in that. That was Alain, Arsek, and Steinberg used the variable baseline interferometer, the same as the Cambridge group.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
To once again look at the limb brightening. So let's go back to your here. Now, here's a paper in 51 that you published with Rocard, which is rather interesting because he had not published many papers in radio astronomy until then, but he got interested in this problem, I guess. This was on treating a shock in a plasma that you might get plasma waves and so forth.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't really know enough about this subject. Is this the general outline of how plasma waves are believed to operate in solar bursts today, or what was the idea, basically?
That when you have a shock, you have a two mixing medium, aval and amount, with different temperature.
Right.
And that gives you a mixture of two distribution function of the electron, of the kind of mixture.
Right.
So you might have a two bump, and that gives the right distribution to have an amplification of radio waves.
I see.
You see? I would not say that nobody knows no, can't say that that doesn't work. I think that nobody knows really what happened in shockwaves now, for instance, for type 2 burst, and what is the mechanism of radio emission. I don't think that nobody has a real theory for this. So, well, it was a theory, another one, but I could not say that it was disproved or proof. Rocca was a rather good specialist of shockwaves, or
And this also apparently explained the polarization that was observed somehow. Is that correct?
I would not say so. Mm.
Let's see. Well, let's see, continuing on, we've talked about the limb brightening. Now, what about this business of R spots and Q spots?
That I think, from my idea, that is the first time that we observe the, what is called now that scene in the X-ray, right? The X-ray sun, you know, where the black hole.
The coronal holes?
The coronal holes. I think it was the same general ideas, you know. I tried to relate the magnetic activity to the solar activity.
Right. You know?
The first idea of this was Allen work.
Right. You mean geomagnetic?
Geomagnetic activity, right. with radio,
right,
activity from,
right,
the sun, and because I thought that geomagnetic activity was a reflection of the particle emission of the sun, so it was obvious that there were spots that were very active and were very large radio emission. And I think that at that time I did not realize that there were the spots giving type 4 burst.
This was before.
Yes, it was much before. Right. So I saw a very large radio emission, and I see that was a very active spot with the flare and things like that,
right,
and a very large radio emission. And so I thought that was a typical spot. And then there were other spots where the magnetic activity decreased instead of increasing.
Right.
I tried to find a scale in radioactivity where above the given scale of radio emission,
right,
I had activity.
Yeah.
Under this scale, I have no activity,
right,
less than there were no spots. And now the thing is clear for me. It was not clear at that time, but now with the coronal hole, it is for me clear. That is, when you have optical spot,
yeah,
active with magnetic field, but with no type 4 burst,
yeah,
there is no sudden geomagnetic activity. But you don't have the recurrent geomagnetic activity. That's come from the coronal hole.
I see.
You see? So, you can divide on the sun three places, if you like. The coronal hole, where there is no spot,
right,
and that gives the recurrent magnetic activity,
right,
recurrent flux. The spot that just give no coronal hole, but not very strong geomagnetic activity.
Right.
And the spot where there is a big flare, and where there is an activity of geomagnetic sudden impulse activity.
Hmm.
So I think I actually at that time.
So you think that there's this idea may come back a little bit?
Maybe. Now we see the things much more clearly. Doesn't.
Yeah.
But it was, I did not explain this at that time, you know.
Right, right.
Why they are quiet spots? Actually, they were quiet spots because the spots were just implying that it was not a hole.
Yeah.
No, so there were not recurrent activity. That's the general idea. But, and the active spot, of course, were the spot where they were type 4. Right? So,
well, let's see, looking, now we've come up to the mid-50s, and you, by this time the Nansei station had been established for a year or two, and you continued to be the head of the radio astronomy group all the way until the big reflector, I think.
Yes, I started.
Now, for you, was most of your time being spent with trying to get the government to give you money and things like this?
Yes, in some way, but at that time I had time to work in science because we had a very good team, very active with Steinberg, Blum, Leroux, Gina, and the young people like Lucke and. Yes, we really had time to work, and it is at that time. And the radio interferometer was giving on the sun the first results. And we had at that time the really worthwhile experimental results with the type 4 burst and things like that. That was really of value and you, something that was important.
That's something that you did together with Washoe.
With Washoe, yes, right. That's right. Yeah, we discussed together. I don't know what Washoe says, but I could say that we were giving this. He was the first, of course, to spot that there was something abnormal in measuring on the record, and we discussed about the theory of this, and suspect that it could be electrons, radiation, synchrotron.
And was that the first time that the synchrotron mechanism had been used for the sun?
I would say so. You can probably find a paper by Kippenheuer that was mentioning this as a possibility. But it was just, as I say, a ballon d'essai, as I was mentioning the cosmic ray source of radio noise in the galaxy, you know. I think it was the first time that we gave good evidence that it should be this. And I think this evidence was very well received and
What were the other important results that you think that came out of the first years at Nansei with the arrays got larger and so forth?
Well, I think that was the main result of this type four, yes, and the different type of storms, of noise storm, and it was a little bit of meteorology, but anyway, I think we had pretty much thing at that time.
And a bit of what did you say?
Meteorology, because it was so complicated.
Meteorology,
you know,
yes.
It was more descriptive that that we really. I had the idea of explaining the type 3 burst by plasma oscillation also, but I don't think, I think it is Paul White that we reached the first, but I was exactly in this mode, and we had at that time a very, very good enthusiastic collaboration with all the people working in this field, like Paul White, for instance, and we posed and we had extremely good discussion, and I remember it gave, I don't remember what the ERSI meeting, general invited paper talk on the radio possibility of emission on the sun and on different type of emission that we could expect due to the structure of the corona and it was a very lively.
Are you saying that there was not that much competition between the groups, or that there was competition but it was healthy? Competition rather than
yes, it was very healthy. I am. I remember always this phrase. I should not say that, but it was said by Fred Haddock. Told me, well, you'd really like to discuss your idea because you have idea.
Right.
you know, I was always open, and I did not try to keep the thing. Right. I was. I like to discuss, and I think we had very good contact at that time. There were no problem between.
But now, of course, the thing about Nansei was that it seems to me anyway that you were continually going to higher and higher resolution, longer baselines, And yet you haven't mentioned that as being an important result, the size of the burst or things like that. Do you think that that really didn't pay off as much as you thought it might?
Well, yes. Oh, yes, pay to see the motion of the spot, to see where they are, etc. Yes, that paid pretty much, but it did not pay so much at the Type 4. That was really a big phenomena, you know. Mm-hmm. It was a really new big phenomena introducing the cosmic ray production by the sun, the polar cap, the proton, and making a lot of people interested in this. I would say that the year after we discovered the Type 4, there were 100 papers on this, you know.
I see.
In Japan, in the USA, in 100 or something like that, you know.
Amazing, yeah.
Yes, it was really, I think that was an interesting peep.
Can you expand a little bit on these other aspects of it? You mentioned the polar cap and so forth, I'm not familiar.
The polar cap is the effect of the cosmic ray coming to the polar cap and give a damping of the radio waves, you know, the polar cap absorption.
The Earth's polar cap?
Or the Earth's polar cap, yes. When you have an emission of cosmic ray from the sun,
right.
it gets to the Earth, to the pole.
Right.
And then by collision of proton with the atmosphere,
yeah.
The ionized atmosphere, and you give an absorption of the radio waves that pass by the pole.
Now, which radio waves do you mean? From the galactic background?
Radio background, but also for the radio wave, radio communication from the planes.
Oh, yes, oh, yes.
That was interesting for the planes, you know, using the polar...
I see what you're
polar,
saying.
...polar way and things like that. So all this radio bursts were very interesting for forecasting activity. You see, all this problem, at that time we had a big problem of radio communication because most of the radio communication was ionospheric radio communication.
Right.
So there were no satellite. No. So they were very interested for forecasting the good or bad communication, and obviously that was a thing important. And then the radio, the Type 4 also was outside cosmic ray was very well related with large magnetic activity, also geomagnetic storm, big geomagnetic storm. So all this stuff really interesting.
Are you saying that it's more related than the types 1, 2, and 3?
Much more. Yes, there's no question about that. Yes,
I see.
Much more. Yes, maybe not like type 2, but anyway, anytime you have a type 4, you really have something big and something.
I see. So
it's significant.
It really gave the best link
between
the
exactly.
Solar activity and the fade-outs.
No, it directed attention towards the right flares, you know, because
right.
That was difficult. No, the Type 3 is not a good indicator because these are electrons and there are many of them and they are not good indicators. But the Type 4 was really proved to be a very good indicator. And furthermore, it gave interesting insight to look at the corona. To see what was the corona as far as magnetic bottle and things like that, magnetic propulsion,
right.
And how it keeps the electrons there moving and back and forth, and what they do. And even now, it is not so well solved. The first, we have to wait for the last space station, American space station.
The space shuttle?
The space station before the shuttle got launched 3 or 4 years ago.
Skylab?
Skylab, to really see the Type 4, you know.
Yeah.
because after a while, otherwise they were not really concerned.
Right. Now, it just came to mind, did you try or were you able to get any money from the French military because of the communications value of all this, or was
no,
all your
no,
funding
really no,
from the
really no.
from the
really
civilian
no. But
government.
At that time, I think we had a good reputation in France, and I could not say that we had any difficulty of getting money.
I see. Because, of course, a lot of the American effort in solar astronomy was funded by the Navy and the Air Force.
Exactly, yes, exactly. But no, not in France. No.
I see. Well, let's see. I think I'm going to have to.
We might go inside if you have.
Now, I noticed that at the Paris Symposium in 1958, you gave a sort of summarizing talk about the state of solar radio astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
And what would you say was the main theme as you saw it at that time?
Hmm.
What were the main problems that were not understood.
Hold on. I think I can answer this now. I really have to read again just a book because I could not say now. Okay. I don't really remember.
Do you have any memories from that Paris Symposium?
Yes, I remember, but it was in 58.
But, I mean, as to the nature of the meeting and so forth,
mm-hmm.
it seems to me that it was sort of the last time that radio astronomy could be the subject of a meeting.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's true. Afterward, fortunately, they explode in all kind of way.
Right.
And
now, what about when you talked at the COSPAR meeting in Nice in 1960? Were you trying to communicate with the space scientists, I guess, by going to this meeting? Was that the idea?
Yes, but my idea, I think, at that time was that it was at what year?
60.
60. Yes, my idea was that we could observe the... with space, we could observe the Earth as a radio emission.
I see.
That was the idea, you know?
Which has been done recently.
It just has been done. Yes, yeah. That's right.
And what sort of frequencies were you thinking of?
Oh, ionospheric frequency, you know. It's ionospheric. It would only be some kind of F2 layers frequency. Yes.
I see.
Yes,
I see.
That was the idea.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. And were you trying to get someone to put a satellite up, essentially, to...
Yes, I thought it was if people put a satellite, it could be interesting to look. And that was the first idea when I engaged Steinberg in doing space research, actually.
I see. That's where that began.
That began, yes.
Okay, now, in 57, you published a paper in Annales d'Astrophysique about radio source fluxes, which you had measured at 900 megahertz. And this is the first time that you got involved in radio sources directly. How did that come about?
Yes, because Leroux was working on a radio source later at the time, Leroux Manley. And so I was interested in all this business. And I discussed with Leroux. At that time, we were trying to understand how the CRAB emission, the Taurus A emission was made up. And I think that Leroux was one of the first that was trying to figure out what was the effect of the ultraviolet emission of synchrotron emission and excitation of the nebulae.
So
that was the idea, you know?
Right.
We discussed. And I think, I don't remember if it is in this paper or another paper, but I have an idea that at that time, Bad, I remember, from Palomar, observed some kind of emission from the crab.
With a polarimeter.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, some kind of clouds getting out.
Right.
And I thought it might be like the type 4, you know?
I see.
I think I don't remember where I published this, but I did publish this. I think not a compound. And that proved to be right, after all. It was very early.
When you were thinking of the mechanism for the crab emission, were you accepting that it was synchrotron?
Yes, of course. Yes, that's right. You observed it, yes.
It was more a matter of the details of how the synchrotron worked.
Yes, that's right. My idea was always that synchrotron should be kind of quiet emission and that the plasma emission should be erratic because it was not really condition of a...
I see.
Another idea that I had at that time for the sun was that the emission could be a Mazur emission. But I never wrote anything because I didn't know that.
Now, which emission do you mean? The burst?
The burst, yes. The burst. And I think, I still think that's probably true. That is the
beam
of electrons.
Coherent.
Coherently excite the
right.
Whistler mode.
I see.
I think that's probably true. I never had anything, I never tried to do the calculation, but I think it might be an idea that probably it could be true even now, because nobody really knows what the best are.
Now, when you were working on the crab in the around 57 or so, I guess it was, Were you puzzled at all about what was accelerating these electrons to give you the synchrotron emission?
No, I didn't thought of it per se, I would say. No. Okay. No, well, yes. Oh, I remember we had an excellent idea with Stones. Stones was working at the École Normale at that time. And we discussed together. He had the idea.
How do you spell his name?
Towns.
Oh, Towns.
Nobel Prize.
Oh,
yes.
Towns.
And Towns was interested in this problem of Crab Nebula emission.
Yeah.
And he had the idea that it might be I was trying to explain the emission of the Crab Nebula by a kind of Fermi process inside the Crab Nebula, you see.
Right.
And I discussed this with Towns, and Towns in discussion goes further and was saying that we might found to get this Fermi process moving, consider the Crab as a cavity for magneto-hydrodynamic waves, long magneto-hydrodynamic wave inside the cavity.
A resonant cavity?
A resonant cavity, more or less resonant cavity, you see. At least a cavity where the wave would be reflected back and forth.
Right.
It's not
right.
Resonant. And so these waves could
be amplified.
Those waves could give, the by Fermi process, the energy to the electron, just by collision. You know, that was the idea that we discussed. That's probably, nobody probably told you about this idea.
I've never heard of that.
No, that was never published, but I remember. But it is interesting because Towns was always interested in radio astronomy. He published one of the first papers. Of course, he did a lot
right.
of really good things. But this idea was one that was he was thinking of in Paris, and we discussed together
right.
about considering the.
But what was the energy source for the magnetohydrodynamic wave?
Well, any kind of turbulence inside
a general turbulence
inside the cavity. Yes, that's right.
Very interesting. Now you mentioned LaRue, and of course LaRue is famous for his paper on synchrotron emission.
Yes, yes.
Now, did you work with him at all on that? Were you his advisor?
No. Yes, I was advisor, but I think that was that was a paper of LaRue. I did not. We discussed this, but he was his work. No, I did not.
Now, what about this paper with Kundu that you mentioned earlier, where you found that the 10 centimeter compared nicely with the critical frequency of the E layer and so forth. You said you thought that was a pretty good.
Yes, it was a pretty good step because that the idea was that this 10 centimeter was a source of X rays emission. That was exciting ionospheric ultraviolet X ray emission, exciting the ionosphere, E layer, and when we observed the Sun with space with X-ray, the Sun was not observed with X-ray at that time.
Right.
We did observe that the X-ray emission were actually coming from the slowly varying component of the...
Which correlates with the 10 centimeters.
Which correlates with 10 centimeters. So that was an idea that proved to be right at that time.
Well, let's see. My bibliography stops at 1960 here, but I want to take this through the building of the Nansei telescope.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think I wrote very much because 60. Yes, because I was in charge of the Paris Observatory, and I think my last work here was on the plasma oscillation. And I was working with a student of Paul Wild, MacLean, that works now in Australia and spent here 1 or 2 years, I think.
I see.
And we were working on theory of plasma oscillation.
I see. And when was this?
And that was probably in 60, 61.
But what about the? Can you tell me about the early plans for the Nansei telescope, when did you first think about having a large reflector, and why did you choose a Krauss type and so forth?
Steinberg told me, as I will tell you, because at that time, by nature, I am not at all inclined to build a large telescope. I like much better to work and do things on things, little things. I don't like the big thing. I thought at that time that if we had to provide for the future generation a tool for radio astronomy, and the obvious tool was to move towards the galactic work. The galactic work was starting with the 21 centimeter line.
Right.
We think at that time when Van der Hulst decided, I don't know what year it was, probably 55.
Well, it was discovered. The line was discovered in 51.
51.
And then it was exploited years after that.
Years after that. So we start here thinking about that, probably in 55 or something like that.
Right.
So our first idea was to build an interferometer, a large interferometer, a 30-meter mirror, I think, with on a railroad.
Two 30-meter
dishes. Dishes on a railroad. I would say so. Steinberg should recall it better than I do. And because we had experience with the two Würzburg that we had in Nancy,
right,
and we had good results. I don't know. That's the thing. That one thing that I should say for history is that in Nancy, it is an addition of, I did not work on this, but in Nancy, the first work of Lecque shows that probably the radio source were double or multiple.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the place where it was discovered the first.
Yeah. It's very close to the Caltech work, I'm not sure.
Yes, but exactly, but you know, the Cygnus was proved to be double.
Right, in 54.
Then, Lecque was working here and find two more of them, Virgo and Aron. So I went to Caltech and I met Moffett, and you probably remember.
I see.
And I say, well, you know, we have two more, so probably they are all double. They are multiple. This is a proper idea.
I see. You know.
So they did the experiment.
They got them interested, yeah.
Yes, they were interested, but you know, all this was in the mud. But I remember this trip to Caltech and I...
When was that, the trip? You know?
I don't know. It is the time that Lecque probably published his first paper on the use of the two Würzburg interferometer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't remember the year exactly, but it was before the publication of the Caltech
of Moffett and Maltby.
Yes, exactly. And they did not know that at that time.
Interesting.
So they were directly. It is a little less like pose for the component, slow Levi component, and the noise, you know. It was I discussed with him at that time, and that was also, I think, a good thing. Well, it was a digression. We were
you were talking about Nansei and choosing
so,
what to have.
Yes, so we thought it was time to build a large, so we tried to build an interferometer, more or less like Caltech built afterwards. It was a general idea to build this. Unfortunately, the ground in Nancy was not strong enough to support the railroad. It was too expensive to build a strong railroad, strong enough. So we have to choose something else. And to choose something else, it was one solution was to make a large mirror, like Dwingelow, that's right. But we are trying to do something larger, and it was at that time the Krauss type stuff that gave a solution, and we would have better to use a two mirror because it was cleaner to use. So we chose this type of structure that is a little bit awkward, but that gives a large surface anyway.
Right.
You are collecting everywhere, and that proved to be usable, and the reason was you buy this. So it was the idea was to build a large stuff, at least usable, 21 centimeter, and to have and we could not build a movable interferometer that should I think that from now, what I think you have had better to build it to, at that time we will have, if we had a two mirror interferometer movable, we will have a very, very nice tool. Because we had the first idea of the synthetic antenna.
The synthesis?
The aperture synthesis. We had it with two little mirror on 3 centimeters on the sun. And we make aperture synthesis with Kundu at that time.
Right. I remember you talk about the changing hour angles.
Yeah, that's right. No?
Change. But now, were you actually thinking of the same principles of aperture synthesis?
Yes. Yes, I was thinking of this because we had different fringe and... it was possible to make a starting Fourier analysis.
Right.
It is obvious with the sun recall.
Right.
But we did not pursue this because the sun was a variable spot, so it was not possible to use it properly, and we did not have enough power to use it on stars. And we did not pursue this idea. But actually, we see the process that at work, and so that was the idea when we tried to. It will be the idea when we would have tried to make a two mirror, but so we make this this not exactly a cross type. We prefer to use the one that we use rather the cross type. I don't remember why, but cross type it will be different, and I don't remember.
No, what do you mean now? Are you talking about the large reflector or
the? The large reflector.
Or you mean as opposed to a Mills cross?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of differences.
I mean, Nancy is not exactly like Krauss.
Oh, like Krauss. Oh, I think they're cross.
Krauss. Yes, but the minor difference.
Boschot was telling me about the difference in design and so forth. Yeah. Now, did the construction and design of Nancy proceed rather smoothly? Was it pretty straightforward as to how to go ahead and do it?
No, we were lacking of some industrial support in France for this type of work. We certainly did not have the mastering of this type of work that we would have now, for instance, in France. The industry was somewhat backward with respect to what there were in Germany and in England and in USA. And it improved very much now. Now it is the same. But
you mean in terms of actually building large structures? And
Building large structures of a special device for driving the things.
Right.
You see all this type. And for electronics too, you know, we did not have a special firm making good receiver, for instance. You
right.
know, there were
right.
no at that time. Now with sparse research and we have this, and the French industry is up to the point now, but at that time it was not the case, so we had difficulties of that sort.
This slowed things down?
But we probably could have a better design if we had more experienced engineers from the firms, you know. We had to do with a firm that's making bridge and things like that, you know, but we could have better design with firm making planes
or antennas.
Didn't have nobody was really making good antennas. So that was a difficulty. I think it was the main difficulty. So that we could have made up something more precise, more handy, if we had a better engineer from the industry.
Well, this takes it to about the point where I'm stopping. Can you think of anything else that we've forgotten along the way that you'd like to mention?
Let me see.
Any general comments on the development of radio astronomy?
No, I don't see any now. If I ever get something, I would write to you.
Okay, right. Well, thank you very much.
That's all right.
After the recorder was off, Denise told me about the excitement that all the groups at that time had, for instance, NRL and Wilde's group, when they were always considering what was the next experiment to do, what instrument should be built, and everything was so new that you could make so many discoveries that it was an extremely exciting time. So that ends the interview with Denise on 9th July 1976. This is also the end of this side of the tape.